Hello and welcome from a super soggy San Francisco. This is Wizards of the Cast episode 30 in a room filled with planeswalkers. We've got Evan Wardell.
Howdy doodles.
Coming from Seattle, which is probably even rainier, we've got Larry Chatfield. Sorry, Larry.
Wonderful. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Who are you? Who are you?
A great rolling introduction. And for myself, we've got Cole Ferriolo. I'm soaked down to my socks, which
Fuck
I had to take
you.
Off. You? I had the umbrella.
You got to walk back with my umbrella.
Look, at least I was also keeping Lucy dry, okay? It was a comfortable...
No, the umbrella was keeping Lucy dry. She was nice enough to let you use it as well.
That's true.
I had to... Me and Cole just started working with me, and we... came back here after to do the podcast, mm-hmm. but I had to go to the post office.
That's right.
And the post office closes like half hour after I get out of work, so I had to run to the post office. The buses were all full because everyone, you know, it's raining out. And when I left work, it was a light rain, and like, you know, since I couldn't get in the bus, I had to walk, and then it just started downpouring, and I couldn't wait for another bus because I had to get there before the post office closed.
Oh my God! When I left like 10 minutes after you, and it was coming down hard. It was serious. And yeah, the buses weren't stopping. They were like full of people. Lucy was like, should we catch a bus? And I was like, just gotta huff it. Like, traffic was a snarl. People were running. I don't know if you know this, but in California, when it like seriously rains, like when it comes down, you know, you get like an inch maybe in a couple hours or an hour, people freak out. It's like the apocalypse.
Oh, boy.
Here. It's like every, and it was like 5:30 rush hour, and it's downpour and people are freaking out.
Last week was a nightmare. It's like they don't even prepare the infrastructure to deal with like any sort of rain. Like a transformer near my work shorted out and blew up because there was like the power was out all over downtown because of this transformer exploding. Yeah. I saw a video of it on Reddit. There was like smoke all over, like covering a whole block, and it was just like they could have just like, I don't know, put some rubber around it. Like,
no, man, rubber comes from the rainforest, and that's a danger, so no rubber for you.
Moral of the story, I am wetter than a cheerleader on prom night.
I saw
you hope so.
Somebody sent a picture of, like, the Twitter where, like, the like, 280 was, like, going into, like, the 101, and it was literally, like a foot of water, like just standing water.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing is in California, because we don't get rain that often, the ground like bakes out, you know, especially after the dry months. So when it does rain, the ground doesn't really absorb the water. So it all runs down. You do get kind of the flooding, which is the side effect and really what causes the issues. But it must be a bit wetter up there in Seattle. How are you doing with those soggy days?
Oh my God. It's like basically you can't go more than like 3 inches without running into moss here.
Really? Like, moss?
There's moss and mold on everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's so wet here all the time.
That's right. Yeah. I've heard of people having like respiratory issues up north if they, you know, the climate kind of doesn't agree with them because I guess it is just damp.
A lot of blue-green creatures in
totally
Seattle. I'm trying to relate this back to Magic, guys.
It's those blue-green Seattle Seahawks, which I hate because I'm all about Boros. I am the red and the gold and the 49ers, which lost terribly to Seattle. As well as most people, I think I ended up drafting a Boros kind of colors in cube on Sunday and voiding the 49ers Seahawks game. I think Shang was blue-green, which totally made sense because he was housing people with all those morph creatures.
I was doing pretty good.
You were doing pretty good. You had the black-white humans theme, which I didn't even know. I kind of like had an inkling that that would make a deck, but I never thought about like just drafting solely that in the cube.
Yeah, so probably should have introduced it, but that's okay.
We're rolling. I'm trying to bring it back to Magic. And
yeah, Cole finally resurrected his cube from the depths of burglary.
Put it back together.
I'm not even sure that's resurrection. I mean, that's like
just bought it again.
Yeah. It's like it's a completely different creature, right?
I mean, it did go through a rebuild. I mean, honestly, the power level
was the same though. Like, it still felt like,
yeah, the mana base was different, but no, the power level was off too because I didn't include cards, the multicolor cards were just from Innistrad forward, and now I expanded the multicolor cards from all of Magic.
Yeah, I mean, like, the overall power level doesn't feel like crazy
powerful. It's always had a limited focus.
Yeah.
So you play limited Magic, but, like, you get more powerful kind of multicolor spells, which is, I think, what I realized was that the monocolored stuff, which is Innistrad forward, felt a little lumpy in its power level as compared to the multicolor stuff, which when you get to select, I also upped the number of multicolor cards from 11 to 15. So the cube grew by like 50 cards overall. And the mana base completely changed once I had access to fetches.
So you're saying, Evan, that it doesn't feel like vintage cube, right?
No, it's not legacy cube, which just closed on Magic Online. Evan, you had played some of that?
Yeah, I only got like two of them in.
I was listening to Randy Bueller's
really fun, though,
guest appearance on Limited Resources, where he's talking about the design. And it's funny because if you're interested in cube design, definitely go listen to that, because, you know, Randy, a developer at Magic at Wizards, was definitely had some really interesting things to say about cube design in general. And apparently he really did a number on making that a much more enjoyable format.
Yeah. I mean, when I drafted it, I don't know a lot of the cards that are out there. So I kind of like, I had seen some other people like watch some streams where people had drafted blue and black, and like some combination of blue and black and white. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of knew the cards, like those color cards.
Yeah.
So I kind of like placed a premium on those when I was drafting, and then it like seemed kind of open. I was like getting some good cards like kind of late, and I was like, all right, cool, these colors are open, I know what's good, I can kind of go for it. And then I just fell into something good.
That's a good thing, because from everything I've heard from every, and I haven't actually done it, but from everything I've heard and from watching it, that everybody, basically everybody said white is the most powerful color.
Oh yeah, if you can get like, I mean, it's got all of the you know, the arguably 3-1 mana white removal spells. You get, you know, Path to Exile, Swords to Plowshares. And then there's another one. I forget what it's called. Mana Tithe,
the counterspell?
No, but it's a 1-mana instant that you can put an attacking creature on the bottom of its owner's library.
Condemn. Yeah. I mean, those are the three best.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, and if you give white, I think, that access to cheap and efficient removal like that, you speed white up considerably. Yeah,
and then you get like Thoughtseize, so you got like 4 1-mana removal spells.
Yeah.
But,
you just play a 2-drop and you win.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I cooked up some.
Well, you continue to draft white. You drafted the black-white. I meant to ask you, did you ever take an Anthem effect? Because that, I think, is what would have put your deck over the top.
No.
I did see a Spear of Heliod go around me.
Well, I only had two ways to make tokens. I had Lingering Souls and Increasing Devotion.
Yeah.
So those were the only real token makers. Mm-hmm. I was sort of more relying on, like, black just had a lot of really good, like, value creatures, like Lifebane Zombie, and, Zathrid Necromancer was kind of what put me tokens. I took that because I realized I had a couple humans. I was like, all right, I can place a premium on these humans now. And with Increasing Devotion, you know, it's just kind of insane.
It makes 5/1/1 humans. You also got like a Champion of the Parish too, which is one of my favorite cards.
Yeah, which works really well with Increasing Devotion. The reason I was in black white was because I was like, I first picked an Utter End, then I just got more black removal, and I just kind of fell into it. And black just has like some really good just creatures on its own that don't really need synergies.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Oh God, someone's messaging me on. Hold on, let me stop this. I'm getting noise. We're good. So I was in at Mace.
You know what your deck really needed? It needed Sorin instead of Obdazat. If you had the Sorin the Wanderer and just like,
yeah, buff Sorin would have been nice. But Obdazat was sweet. I mean, yeah. I'm not gonna. What I needed was both.
you didn't need both.
I'm trying to remember what other like black white spells I had.
Why skimp on these broken cards, right?
You had one of my favorite, which is Cartel Aristocrat.
Yeah, Cartel Aristocrat.
Sin Collector too?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Cartel Aristocrat was really sweet, also synergized with the tokens.
Yeah.
I had a couple games where we were kind of like stalled out. I had my opponent at like 10 life, and I was just waiting to get to my 10th land so I could flashback Increasing Devotion. Then I just, you know, what is he going to do? He's going to die in the next...
If you flashback Increasing Devotion, you pretty much win those games.
Oh, it's crazy. I did not
you
get
just,
to do...
You put 10 power, 10 toughness on the board in a way that's so uninteractive for your opponent. That...
Also, the Champion of the Parish did a lot of work because your cube is so multicolor focused.
Yeah.
So, like, even though all my creatures were, like, small and crappy, if I had a... Oh, I'm sorry, Soldier of the Pantheon.
Oh, yeah, Soldier's great.
He's so good.
Yeah, if I had him out, then I could just kind of, like, stonewall whatever.
Yeah, Soldier was stonewalling my... six for Saga Mahler, that's right. But he was definitely stonewalling... I think I was... I was, like, mono-red, splash, a little white, and splash, like, a little black for Sire of Insanity. No, Sire of Insanity was on the sideboard. What was the... I was playing the Demon. He's a 1/4 for 3 and a black and a red.
Oh, Cruel... Master of Cruelty.
Master of Cruelty is my favorite.
Got that on me.
He's got the First Strike and the Death Touch, and he can only attack alone, which is a little awkward. I realized kind of in the the red deck, because the red deck in my cube is very creature-based, so you play, like, a lot of dudes. So having the attack alone trigger is kind of... rough, but if you hit your opponent with it, they go to 1 and you just shock them and kill them.
Oh yeah,
it's so sweet. And I had actually put in the the Rogue's Passage from to make the Wombo combo.
Wow.
Where you tap 4 and make him unblockable.
Going deep.
That's it
was,
funny.
I was pushing a little my mana base. I think there was only two people who drafted red in our 9-person pod. And it was me.
I had a red card.
Yeah, you had like a little red, like people splashed for like a red card. But me and York basically split the entire red of the pool, and you got all like the red spells. I got all the red creatures. Like I had like so many insane red, like 3-drops and stuff. Like prop. I did the awesome. I was so proud doing a Blood Rushing Rebel Belt Maka onto Prophetic Flame Speaker.
Oh baby.
Drawing like cards off the top. It was a lot of fun.
It was pretty sweet. But, yeah. The one dream I did not get to live is I did not get Increasing Devotion out when I had a Zathra Necromancer out.
Oh yes.
That's what I really wanted to do. Because I had to like when I saw Increasing Devotion after I'd taken Zathra Necromancer, I had to like go back in and look at it. I was like, it doesn't say non token human. I can do this.
Yeah. That's fun. Anyways. And Larry, you've been playing Standard up there in the Moldy Climates, have you now?
I have.
How you been doing in Standard? You played in SCG Seattle, was that right?
Yep. So, yeah, I played the exact same deck that I played last week, where I made the top 16 and got $100. To this one, I went 4-4-1.
Wah.
I mean, it's so funny how, like, I mean, I only changed one card in my sideboard, but, like, just sometimes, you know, your deck just poos on you. And I, like, you know, I mean, I actually started keeping track of it because it was so bad that there were 6 games where I would start with a scry land and a land and never essentially cast a Rabble Master in a game where it was of any import because I didn't get my third land until, like, you know, I actually had somebody, like, cast a Hornet Queen before I got my third land.
Oh no.
So it's really bad, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just,
that's Magic. Sometimes the variance gets you, you know.
Yeah, it's just my deck pooed on me, and so it is what it is. But there is one interesting thing I noticed that so there were like 400 and something people at the event or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the top deck the top placement for a Mardu deck was like all the way down to like 25th place or something.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So Mardu doesn't look like it's very good right now.
Do you think it's falling off? What do you think is that prime component? Is it just?
It's I don't know. I mean, it has some weaknesses and like you know I mean it's not very good against like the token based strategy where like you know you're 1-for-1ing them. You know you do like you know Crackling Doom and Lightning Strike, and they're like, you know, making 3 and 6 tokens and stuff like that, right? You know,
this was at the SCG Open, you said?
Yeah, it's at the SCG Open.
I'm just looking up some deck lists.
So, so the people that, you know, did well were like, you know, again, there were a lot of, Obzon decks that did really well.
Wow, there's three Obzon Reanimator in the top eight, and then looks like four Obzon Reanimator in the top 16.
Yeah.
Woo.
So,
Obzon Reanimator. Mm. Are they playing? So how are they basing? Can you look at a deck list real quick?
Oh, looks like local legend Eric Pei got second place with red-white midrange. Good job, Eric.
I actually like that deck too. It's a lot faster than the. It's interesting because that deck I think has like all the same components of the Mardu, except for that it's just a little more consistent and just has like a little more reach because it has more direct damage and things like that.
Oh, this looks sweet. Yeah, you don't have Crackling Doom I guess Butcher the Horde. So instead of Crackling Doom, you get a more consistent Chain to the Rocks.
Right.
Is he playing the Heliod? To get to the Chain to the Rocks?
Heliod. No. Oh, no, the Pilgrim. No.
Okay.
It's basically take Mardu and take the Blackout.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it's got like Rabble Masters, Seekers, Storm Breath, Brimaz, and then.
Stormbreath Dragon actually matches up really well.
Stormbreath Dragon has matched up insanely well to this entire meta since it started, and yet nobody's played that freaking card.
What's the? Oh goddamn! The Butcher the Horde matches up really well against Butcher the Horde. I can see he costs one mana more, but
Crackling Doom is probably the only way to deal with it in the format as it stands. I mean, maybe Sidisi Whip decks can have something on
it. Yeah, Downfall.
Yeah, you got. I mean, you have downfall.
Yep.
Botsies.
But if you think about it, like the Stormbreath Dragon is a 4/4 haste on turn 5, and if you don't really have anything you can sack to the Butcher, he's really just a 5/4 attacking on turn 5, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
So, like, I mean, they kind of line up very well, and a lot of times, like when I had a Butcher, I wouldn't want to just sack guys just to give them haste. Because, you know, they could kill him, or then you lose both guys. And, you know, I mean, he's really good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's insanely good. But he's not really any better than a Stormbreath.
Yeah. Interesting. And you just get a more consistent mana base, which is probably very helpful, as you saw this last weekend. You know, I mean, especially if you're the Mardu deck and you're already stretched thin on your mana base. So then to really just not draw lands has got to be really frustrating. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it wasn't really about, like, drawing colors that was my problem, is that I just never drew, like, three land.
Yeah.
But the deck that I do like was this, as you're looking at it right now, Evan.
Yep.
Is the blue-white heroic deck from Zachary.
All right.
Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting is that most of those blue-white decks were running the Pilgrims to go and search for the enchantment.
Straight they were.
That seems silly.
Helion's Pilgrim's amazing.
Why don't you just play any other creature?
Do you remember playing Enlightened Tutor? It's Enlightened Tutor on a 1/2.
I don't.
But what he said is, I'm not going to do any of that. I'm just going to play like four Aqueous Forms and screw the 3-drop.
Yeah. That's probably smart too.
So his deck is like super tight. Like, nothing in the deck costs more than 2, and most of it costs like 1. It's like the average like casting cost of the deck is probably like 1.5 or
what's
something.
What's his creature base?
4 Battlewise Hoplite, 4 Favorite Hoplite, 4 Hero of Erois. So that makes all of your 2 mana spells now cost 1 mana.
Mm-hmm.
2 Laguna Band Trailblazer and 2 Seeker of the Way.
Interesting.
So that's like.
That's 14 creatures?
16.
16.
That's 10 1 drops and 6 2 drops, and then, yeah.
Yeah, so
is he playing Stratus Walk?
He's playing 1 Stratus Walk.
Okay.
The 4 ofs in the non-creature department are Aqueous Form, Defiant Strike, God's Willing, and Ordeal of Thassa. Ordeal of Thassa is actually like...
Yeah, it's perfectly...
A lot of the times they can get that off before you have enough mana to come up with a counterspell. Like a removal spell, and then you're just like, oh, god damn it. Now, by the time I get to 2/1, you've already drawn 3 cards, and your dude's huge, so I don't even get any value off of this.
Yeah, completely.
And it's really good, like, you know, because now he's got, like, 6 1-drops with the Favorite Hoplite and the 2 Trailblazer. So I actually like the deck, and he's really doing, like, you know, live by the sword, die by the sword, right? You know, it's like, he's only 20 land, right? You know, it's like, really pushing everything. And the other thing that I like about this deck is that he also took out the coasts.
The shelter lands?
Yeah, he's not gaining it. So only three temples,
yeah,
and everything else is untapped.
Why would you really want to... You can't afford to bring in a land and tap when you're playing all those one drops.
But people were doing it. They were playing like 22 land with eight tap lands because they weren't playing as many one drops.
Yeah, he's down
to 20 lands. Nice.
But so it's an interesting take on the deck. I like it.
Yeah. I feel like if you're going to play the one drops, you really need to ensure that you can cast it on turn one. And this is actually something I was running into in the cubes because I was playing this aggressive red deck. But the way my cube works is that there are quite a few lands that come into play tapped. And I had the turns where I just couldn't lay, the Noble Vampire, the 1/1 that can't be blocked by humans and gains counters, or any of the one drops that I really have in my red creature base. Once they delayed a turn, it really lose a lot of value.
Cube?
Yeah, I was trying to relate to cube how I was too playing a deck with a significant amount of one drops and not being able to play them turn one basically negates their usefulness as a one drop and you're curving out. And so I would not want to play any lands that come into play tapped as much as I could in this kind of blue-white deck where you do need to count on. The thing is, the whole power of the one drop is that it comes out on turn one.
Oh, yeah.
And if it can't come out in turn one, and then you're already on playing your two drop and you need to scale.
Yeah, it's interesting. Since we're talking about mana bases, the other the guy who won the open looks like Eric English with Sultai Reanimator, but Sultai in name only. I mean, the only blue card is Sidisi, and in the Obzon decks, it seems like the only white card is.
That's what's happening to Standard. Siege Rhino. Is Reanimator is now going to take over because I think we're seeing the control decks emerge. And I guess Rabble Master, I mean, I don't know. It's tough to say. What would you say, Larry? Do you think aggro and mid range is certainly being mitigated? Because all we're seeing is now these Sidisi whip based decks, these kind of grind you, just go over the top style strategies. Is there a predominant shift? I mean, this tournament result being one example.
I mean, I see a ton of those decks around. I actually am even seeing Obzon Reanimator now, which is kind of interesting, right?
Yeah.
You killed my Rhino. Okay, I'll bring it back and attack with a 4 trample and you take 3 life. You know, it seems pretty good.
It looks like the only real difference in the lists between Obzon and Sultai Reanimator is with Obzon you get Siege Rhino and with Sultai you get Sidisi.
So my question is, how much is the whip gonna be? Is it like already an $8, $12 card?
I don't know, man.
Like $1.75.
It's only $4.
Okay, that's still at least a decent increase.
You know what it is? The interesting is again, and I granted it's in these decks they're playing like 3 and 4 of sometimes, but it is legendary, so I think that always hurts a card's value.
That's true.
I think the biggest.
Yeah, well, it's. It's not it's rare, right? It's not mythic.
No, it's not rare. Mythic. It's rare too. That also is going to hurt the value.
Rare, yes, not lit mythic.
Yeah, I think the rarity is more of the issue as far as value is concerned. I mean, you can make the argument that since it's legendary, people are going to be playing less copies of it, but people aren't. They're playing the full 4 copy. Whereas the supply is affected by the rarity. So if it's mythic, there's going to be less supply, and they're going to be more expensive. But since it's rare,
But here's the weird thing. So you look at like something like Sidisi, right? It's like $5. But you look at Wingmate Rock, and that thing's like 15 or 20 or something.
Yeah, it's really weird that like even though a card like Sidisi, it's more obvious that it's only going to fit into one sort of archetype or color combination, like. Obviously one color combination because it's has to have at least black, green, and blue in it. So that's a huge restriction. And so you know you're only going to see that in pretty much one archetype.
Right.
Same with Siege Rhino. And so with, you know, people probably think, you know, Wingmate Rock, it's just white, so you can play it in a lot of different decks. But you're still only seeing, like, a couple of them here and there, and, like, mainly in just, like, Obzond anyways.
Well, Obzond...
Like, it's definitely a perception thing, you know? It's not really, like, a...
Well, I have a think is that it's also... There's a demand side of it, because probably most of the people currently playing Standard right now are playing an Obzond variant, because it had such good, strong early success...
Rhino's only $4.
Yeah.
I mean,
again, well, it's that color thing.
Have you seen what is it? The Mantis Riders dropped to?
Yeah, it's
Mantis Rider's done. Mantis Rider dropped. The Mantis ate the Rider. Sorry if you were speculating, guys.
The Mantis finally copulated and was eaten by its girl.
You know what I can't believe? In my draft pool on Friday, there were two Mantis Riders going around, and I was playing Jeskai, and I didn't see one of them.
Oh.
I was sad.
I'm just glad I don't feel like I have to take it.
Yeah, that's true. It's great in draft, though. I mean, I had to make up...
Yeah, those colors. Oh, it's nuts.
It's insane. Even if... I was playing it... I think... What was I playing it in? I was playing it in a... What is it? I was splashing the blue in it in a... Mardu deck.
Oh, wow.
Like 2 weeks ago. And when I could cast it, it would just take over the game. It's like, all right, now I'm going to lightning bolt you every turn, and you can't attack me with something with three or less power.
Actually, you know what's funny is we were talking about this the other day, and because somehow in like doing all our testing and everything, Bruce lost one of his lands, and he lost the Temple of Malady. So the Temple of Malady is like $11 or $12
Yeah, it's
right
expensive.
So stupid.
No, it's... I mean, it's not. It's totally...
It's like in every deck now, right?
Yeah. I'd be interested to see what the temples drop off to out of rotation. I was thinking about this the other day. And, you know, there's legitimate advantage, I think, more than anybody expected when we saw the lands debut in the Scry ability. And they've really, I mean, they've been the only fixing present in Standard. They are like $10 cards, and they're all going to stay that value as long as they are in Standard. Yeah, some of them are.
It really is like the Theros ones are like $2 to $3, and then the Born ones are like $3 to $7, and then, you know, the Journey into Nyx ones are like, especially Temple of Malady is like so much money because it was opened so little. And
so little, and it's going to always kind of get played in those black... green grindy decks that want a source of card advantage when they can get it.
But it's funny because it was the least popular land for a while.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know,
it immediately debuted. So when I built the cube the first time, I got them for like $2, and then I built the cube for the second time, I got them for like $7.
Really?
Because
I remember them just getting like really expensive right off the bat. Oh, you know what? I guess you're right.
There was like a grace period of about 60 days.
Back in Devotion Standard.
Yeah,
it
wasn't that much. Like people were splashing him in the Black Devotion deck a little bit.
I feel like as soon as people started playing Abrupt Decay and Black Devotion, it just like went nuts.
Yes. I mean, it eventually spiked very much.
You know, I wonder how much the perception of its price affects how much people are playing it in the Standard decks. Like if you're playing Obzon, depending on your mana base, like it's hard. You don't always know if a Temple of Malady or Temple of Plenty are going to be like, you know, which one you want three and which one you want four, you know, whatever split you're thinking of. And I always wonder how much the price of the card affects people's perception of how many they should play in a deck.
Okay. So here's the funny thing. So Temple of Malady, $11, right?
Woo.
Temple of Mystery, $2.
Yeah. Yeah. The white black one was like worthless.
Yeah.
It's so funny. Like how like, shit on that one is.
Well, I think you'll see that probably the ones that
it's probably played more
they'll do long term the best in is the ones that were least open, which is going to be the Malady and the Epiphany.
Yeah,
because actually I could see going forward, you know, like later in Modern, and I'm totally speaking out of my ass here, but later in Modern, because
what's your ass say, Cole?
My ass says that I didn't open a lot of Journey into Nyx, but those cards and those archetypes have value as at least the two, maybe or one or two of somewhere.
So
just weren't open that much.
Speaking of your cube,
yeah.
Cole, is it pretty or is it boring?
Some of it's pretty. I've been making it prettier.
I had a lot of fun.
I've been pimping it out. I think the best thing to do, anybody who wants
good looking.
Good looking. Yep. Is that what it is? I got to get my Kiora. I got to get all my promos for the Theros.
That promo utter end.
That promo utter end is nice.
I like it.
It's nice. Yeah. I wish I had the flavor text on it because I love the flavor text for utter end, but you can't have it all.
Part about that card.
Yeah.
it's not as good as Ride Down, though. That's my favorite.
Oh my god, I was riding down people. I must have driven I took it like late in my drafting my cube on Sunday, and I was just like, I literally said, I looked around to people, I said, I just have to take, like, I think there was maybe two things that were ostensibly like better, and I wasn't totally committed yet to white, but I just had to look around and go, look, I just have an unreasonable love for this card, and slammed it into my pack. And yeah, it won me several games. That card is bonkers. I love that card.
The flavor text is awesome, too.
Yes, the flavor text is part of
it. I will wash you from my hooves. So awesome.
I'm trying to remember, what card were you and me talking about, Cole, before we drafted, where I had some opinion on it, like, I don't know. I guess it's okay. I wouldn't take, like, there was like two cards that I was like saying were okay and wasn't really sure about them, and then was put in a position twice in a row where I was like, I need this fucking card right now and I can't take it. I think one of them was Sin Collector.
Oh yeah.
I was like kind of scrambling for lands, I think.
Did you have some point. Did you get Tide Hollow Sculler at all?
Yeah, I think no. Those were the two. I saw Tide Hollow Sculler and
didn't you have Thoughtseize as well?
I did have Thoughtseize.
You just go all in and just like rip your hand and the Lifebane Zombie.
Yeah.
If you go, if you do any combination of those guys in the span of three turns.
That's why I kept beating Shang.
You just win games.
Wow. Thoughtseize into Scholar into.
Yeah, I mean, that's living the dream. But if you just like the I mean, there's a reason that Thoughtseize into Lifebane Zombie dominated Standard for like a 3-month period, because you just wreck your, like, they're, I actually, so done.
At the very first GP I attended, it was creep. It was a GP Oakland. That was M14, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I had two Lifebane Zombies in my pool, and I was playing. I was main decking Duress, so I had one game against a dude who's playing a big like red green stompy deck, and I just Duressed him turn one. Like, got a whatever. Whatever the 4 damage spell was from M14. I can't remember.
Convokes the Flames?
No, that's M15.
Oh, sorry, M14. Oh, yeah.
It was, I don't know, it was just a good burn spell. Yeah. Like, I took that, and then, like, Lifebane zombied him twice in a row, like, took his Genesis, or his, like, whatever.
Like, Pelucranos or something like that.
The Hydra that doubles when it attacks.
Oh, yeah, the Colonia Hydras.
Colonian Hydra, and then, like, some other big creature, and he's like, I just can't. He was just like so sad, because he started all like chipper and like, oh, I have this awesome hand, I'm gonna crush you, and then just like tore it apart, and just then he couldn't block.
Played
me
6 power.
Yeah,
that he couldn't block.
Yeah, took away his one way of dealing with them with the Duress, and then I was doing that all day. It felt so good.
Lifebane Zombie is insane. And yes, it's in the cube, and yeah, definitely a lot of fun. And then I cross-eyed drafted Innistrad. Yorick had put together, He does a like an Innistrad cube where he seeds the packs and gives you the flip transform cards.
Friend of the show.
We'll have, hopefully have him on soon.
I like being able to say that.
And yeah, drafted that cross-eyed. Hadn't played that set.
Yeah, that was really fun.
It was really fun. I got tanked in it.
Yeah. So he had like a repack cube, I think it's called.
Where exactly.
You recreate packs. Mm-hmm. And then you draft it, so it's, you know, it's meant to recreate the,
so you get actually the like 10 or you get 11 commons, 11 commons,
3 uncommons,
1 rare, and then you get the transform card too, which you also like randomly doles out because you have to reveal that. And then,
so it'd actually be 10 uncommons.
I think it's 10 uncommons because you get the land.
You get the land,
but
yeah.
It doesn't give you the land.
And then one of those cards is a flip card. It's very, I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah, the flip cards are definitely a lot. I'm kind of glad. I feel like having both transform cards and morph cards in my cube would be really like, I mean, I think our player base that we play with now is really, can probably handle that complexity, but it could be.
They really actually synergize really well. Because you can spend your turn morphing up a creature. You don't without God. Casting a spell, and then you can flip your dude.
Ugh.
So you still get to do something on a turn, and get to get your flip on.
I was playing the red green. I was trying to draft the tribal red green werewolves deck, and the flip mechanic was really like difficult to wrap my head around. I was really because you know do you take the tempo off and upgrade your guys. But if your opponent plays two spells in one turn and there's flashback, so like they could play something cheap and flash something back. That's not that far out of the, you know, the way. And then flip all your guys back and then like attack you. And you didn't see that coming. And some of the cards transform them out of, you know, the context of playing spells. Just like how they transform is very interesting in the kind of game state it creates.
The difficult thing for me when we were drafting it, at least, was how difficult the just general power level of the set was to assess, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, until you've played a set a couple times, it's hard to really get a good feel for the general power level of the creatures that you see.
It's interesting. All the creatures felt very small. Like
they did, didn't they?
I was playing with, you know, we're colored by current cons where you're flipping up things. But you have like, I guess an early game of two power stuff, but a lot of like 1/2s, 2/1s, things that ping something for one, like a 1/1 first strike for two. I think both the Ironsmith, you and I had them in our decks.
Yeah.
Sam felt like strangely very powerful.
Really good. Yeah.
Because a lot of things were of one toughness, and, or just like one power or kind of odd mixtures of things. Anyways, I can't say a whole lot about it.
You know the card, the mechanic that like apparently no one else ever seemed to like was like, not. I don't know what they call it, but basically when you spun the card.
Oh yeah, that
detain?
Came out.
Detain?
No, not detain. Printed two cards. No, we're talking about Kamigawa block.
Kamigawa when they they would activate like you know they would basically spin when they like a certain something happened. I always thought that was kind of a unique and clever thing, but it didn't take off. Maybe they just didn't do it well enough. I don't know.
That seems, definitely hard to design and enforce, and probably is an underrated mechanic because it was seated in such a historically terrible block of Kamigawa, which is a lot. I didn't play it. This was when I was not playing Magic. This is during like the interim break that I had in my life, but from what I've heard, it's not a great set, but ironically is the first top-down set that they ever did, and they obviously learned from, because Innistrad was a great example of a top-down set.
Well, I mean, there was like Arabian Nights, that was top-down.
That was a Garfield fever dream that he like came up with. That was the 72 hours.
That was the East Coast playtesters.
No, that was him by himself. They needed to print another set. I don't know if you know.
It's like
you probably know
fiction.
A little bit, Larry, more about this than I do. But
it was more him, yeah.
They needed to print another set because Alpha Beta sold so incredibly fast. So he came up with that set in like,
what am I thinking of?
2 weeks or something like that. And it's like really funky and
it's kind of top down though.
No, you're right. It is the first kind of top down set.
Maybe I should say it definitely has a flavor that it's going for.
Yeah.
I mean, top down is really just a design methodology, not really
And he was trying to ape the Arabian Nights saga and things like that. And you did have the djinns. That's where those first showed up.
It's like the interesting about that was it was, you know, like the one that, you know, Innistrad, it's top down, but it's like creating their own whole new world. Like, you know, not taking mythology from anywhere else.
And that's the thing, is that Arabian Nights was the only kind of Magic set to really reference texts outside of Magic has since realized that they can protect their brand.
It was historical fiction.
Yeah, but they've never, you know, now very much they'll create a world and they'll create, we just saw this with Theros, which was most like, they'll create versions of these myths or things like that, or other cultural references within.
They try to get the feel.
A Magic kind of context.
They're not going to talk about like Nosferatu, but they'll maybe come up with like some analogous sort of figure.
Yeah, and that was Singer Vampire for a long time. So anyways,
I also wanted to just give you guys like a little tidbit of information about what I had for the. So I was in my final round, and I, like I said, I was just doing terribly, and that's also the thing that's really weird is when you're in the kind of the dregs of a tournament, you end up playing these really strange decks, and you can see almost anything.
Yeah,
it's the loser's bracket. Yeah.
I've been there. It's not just the loser's bracket. It's like, you know, the dregs. You know, it's like when you scrape the bottom of the barrel and then there's like that residue that's still there. That's kind of
right, hey, these are the people who come with their homebrews and just want to have fun.
So this guy
with the illusions of grandeur with their
kills me in game one where I had a really slow draw and I didn't really draw anything, but he villainous wealthed me for 17.
Oh, nice. Baby. was his name Ivan? No, I don't think he's doing that anymore.
Was he dictative Karametra into villainous wealthing you?
Yep, exactly. and the worst part is you know it's coming and you can't do anything about it.
Nobody casts a dictative Karametra without a good reason.
On your end step without... going right into it. Well, you know what? Honestly, on Friday night, check this off the list. I survived the villainous wealth. I ended up actually 3-0-ing the FNM on Friday night, which felt nice with a Jeskai deck, which felt even nicer because Jeskai's not very good, I guess. I don't know. Right. I actually, you know what I did is I didn't think the deck was overall going to be that powerful, and I played it, I think, well. But what I, looking back on, realized is that I drafted the redundancy that I always thought that deck needed to work. I don't know if you remember, like, several weeks ago when we were talking about Jeskai as the format was developing, it's a deck to me that needs multiple copies of the same thing in order to work. And I had 3 Jeskai Wind Scouts, 2 Hordling Chief, 2 Master Way.
Mardu Horde Chief.
Mardu Horde Chief, sorry.
Master the Way. Ooh,
2 baby. Master the Way. Like multiple copies of a lot of things. Everything was flying. everything was flying. I had like Alabaster Kieran, 3 Wind Scouts, the 2/1 morph that turns into a flyer.
Leaping Master, yeah.
No. He's the
2/1 morph.
He's a 2/1 flying morph for 2 and a white.
Oh, yeah. And he's uncommon.
Flip him. Yeah, I had that one.
Is that Watcher of the Roost?
Watcher of the Roost. There you go.
That guy is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also had a Mystic of the Way, and I had a clone. I had the Imposter, which usually all I did with it was just clone a Jeskai Wind Scout, clone a Mystic of the Hidden Way, or just clone the Watcher of the Roost. And just like put more flying pressure in the air early, and then Master the Way somebody out. And like I'd burn away. I had like removal... I had a treasure cruise. I had actually 2 treasure cruises in the deck.
Sweet.
Which allowed me to win a mold of 2 in game 3 against Alipi, who was trying to villainous wealth me out. In game 1, no, that was the game he actually cast the villainous wealth for 6, hit 4 land, 2 Mardu Horde Chief, hadn't attacked for that turn.
He was like, no.
He was like, no, because I just had like Assault Road Patrol and... like a Watcher of the Roost and a cloned Watcher of the Roost.
Oh, man. Yeah, I also survived a Villainous Wealth.
Oh, yeah?
It's pretty good.
Awesome.
I think... I don't even remember the situation. It was playing Alipi, though. I also had a Villainous Wealth that I didn't get to cast through the entire night. Didn't get to cast it, but...
it's the worst. It's almost as bad as casting it and then losing the game.
Yeah, it was really funny. I had a couple X1s and X2s. Like, it was a slightly aggressive green-black deck.
Mm-hmm.
And Alipi would just stonewalled me with 3 Kintree Wardens. Because yeah. He plays 1, now I can't attack with my team recharger, and I'm like, well, that blows. Then he plays a 2nd one, I'm like, well, now I can't attack with all my bears.
Yeah, he flipped up multiples of those against me, too, and all my shedded flying.
Yeah.
I was pretty much just blue white splash red, and just tried to be aggressive as possible. I did also survive a flying crane technique too.
Wow, that's
really good.
Oh, but yeah, me too.
Oh yeah,
We played against all the same people.
We played against the same people. That's right.
Except I lost against them.
Oh yeah.
No, I when I played against Alipi, I punted. So I've been realizing I just make stupid bad plays that I know are bad and do them anyways. But at mm-hmm. least I'm at a point where I realize that I've made a stupid bad play and I shouldn't make that play anymore.
Do you feel like there's not other options? Because there's like
no, I just
where you see the play forget. Going. Okay,
I just like forget, or I will literally, and I did this a couple times this weekend. I'll have two cards with the same mana cost in my hand,
mm-hmm.
two creatures. I'll just be flipping them back and forth, like while I'm thinking, going through all the thought process. Like, all right, I can do this, I can do that. All right, I'll play this one. Grab a card out of my hand, slam it down, pass the turn. Look down the next turn, it's the wrong creature.
Oh.
Just like, just the dumbest stuff like that. Or I was playing against Shang on Sunday, and I same thing, but I had a land and a counterspell in my hand. Flipping them back and forth, I'm like, all right, I'll play my land, go. I look down, it's the counterspell. Like, god damn it, he knows I have that now. Just like stupid shit.
That drives me insane.
And then the like actual misplays are just like, like I know my opponent is trying to do a certain thing, and I know I'll have to like maybe take some amount of damage or make some bad blocks or like do something to kind of put myself a step back, but I know I have to do it to be able to ultimately come back in the game. And then I'll just like get scared and do the other thing, whatever the other thing is. And then like, you know, five turns later, I'll be like, yeah, that really put me in this really bad situation, and now I'm kind of screwed. Like, maybe it's not pulling the trigger on a removal spell early enough. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's trying to get more value out of a combat trick than I really need to. Maybe it's, like, morphing a creature instead of, like, playing it face-up. But it's always, like, I have the thought where I'm like, I know I should do this,
yeah.
but I could get more value doing this other thing, although I know I really should do the first thing. And yeah. then I'll, like...
Sounds like an issue of timing. Which is like such a like important thing to kind of understand in Magic is when to pull the trigger, like when you see the two lines of play,
yeah,
and you know yes, it you know which one the stronger one is, but you know that that one also maybe has a little bit more risk than like the easier one, and so how to value like developing the board or flipping up the morph, you know, like something like that.
Okay, so here's a perfect example. So I was in a scenario where I was playing in the very beginning of the tournament where I wasn't out of it yet, and I was actually still concentrating and caring. So the guy has is playing Jeskai tokens, and I've killed a bunch of his stuff up to this point, and he's got three tokens up from his goblin from his Hordling Outburst. And I attack with my Butcher of the Horde, getting him to five. And so my choices that I have now is he's got those three Hordling Outbursts out. He's got three land up. And he's got an Ascendancy out. And he's already used two Jeskai Charm. And what I have in my hand is I have five mana, so I can do one of two things. I can cast Anger of the Gods and do three damage to everything, or I can cast Wrath. If I cast Wrath, that's a nice, simple answer. But he's at 10, and if I cast Wrath, I lose my threat. If I cast Anger, the only thing that he can have would be either two spells that would then make his guys 4/4s, or he has to have
three spells, right?
Or he has to have one charm that gives all of his guys +1/+1, and then he triggers it, and then gives them +1/+1 again, right?
Yep.
And so I made the conscious decision at that point that, like, if I want to win this game, like I said, you know, you have to sometimes you have to understand what your role is. And so I said, look, you know, what I think I need to do here is I just need to cast the Anger, and if he's, you know, got the third charm, which is essentially going to give his guys +3/+3 because he's got the Ascendancy, the Charm, and the Trigger, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I lose. And he did. And it was funny, the guys around me were like, you know, you should just cast the Wrath. And I'm like, I don't think so. I mean, yes, I did lose. But I don't think it was a mistake. I think it was a choice.
Well, you understood the risk of the play, though. You understood that the risk is this probability that he has two, you know, ways of beating me. One is just having a card or being able to cast two spells in the same turn. Now, you have to weigh it. What is the probability of him having both of those? Now, taking in the fact that he had played two charms, and you think about the odds of him having, you know, the next charm immediately there, I think you're right. I think you anger, you keep a threat. But long term, maybe do you understand your role as playing? I mean, the thing is, I don't know the matchup that well, so I don't know how fast he could deploy threats again to put pressure on you after you wrath.
Versus, well, he can redeploy threat. I mean, that deck's really good at like redeveloping its board because it's got like, you know, it's got Raise the Alarm, it's got Butch, you know, it's got the Hordling Outburst. And but I just felt like in that scenario, like the right choice was to, you know, and he only had three mana, so I didn't feel he could cast two spells that would of note. And I don't think there really are two spells in that Jeskai deck for three mana. And so the only card he could have would be that one. And he did, and I lost.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I'm okay with this.
Yeah, I mean, if the thing is, there's a, and this is what I was trying to get to with you, Evan, is there's seeing the line of play that wins you the game, or that tries to put you in the better position, and understanding that sometimes you take that line of play and you still lose.
Yeah.
And just like being cool with that too.
Well, what I was trying to get more at is me basically being like, well, I think he's trying to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not totally sure, but it seems like he's kind of trying to do this. And in constructed formats, it's a little more clear what they're trying to do, you know.
You can
make these decisions a little better a lot of the times if you've been playing that constructed format a bunch of times. In a draft, you know, they could have any sort of weird deck. If you think they're trying to do, you know, have some sort of game plan and you need to deal with that game plan, sometimes you need to, or I guess just generally in Magic, sometimes you have to give up a little value to just put yourself in the position you need to be in. And a lot of, I think recently I've been just like I've been a little too wary of giving up value when I probably should just deal with the situation before it gets out of hand.
Yeah. And in that situation there that Larry described, I think giving up the value is playing the wrath, right?
Yes.
And just wiping the board and restarting and doing kind of taking plan B when you know plan B probably maybe it doesn't give you the win right away, but it might still give you the win four turns from now. But plan A, you kind of think, and if you assess what they're doing, I guess, and read and know when to give things up, plan A can maybe give you the win two turns from now.
Yeah.
And knowing when to pull the trigger on plan A and when to go to plan B is...
Yeah, in Larry's situation, you know, it's... You know, the type of decision-making he has to make is a little different, especially because, you know, he's actively destroying one of his creatures. He knows opponent can untap and deploy threats faster than he can. I don't know what was in your hand at the time, but like maybe you didn't have another creature.
And that was actually the biggest thing is that I didn't have another threat. All my spells were reaction.
Yeah, and you're probably playing like Crackling Doom and stuff like that. Like if he plays a Hordling Outburst, you can't just like there's no good way to like deal with a bunch of Hordling Outbursts.
No, Hordling Outburst deals with Crackling Doom. I have kind of a similar thing, and maybe we'll just touch on this quickly and then we'll move on to our Crack Sack of Berry. But game two against Alipi, I had mulled the four. I was able to kind of... His deck was very slow, and he drew kind of poorly. And so I got a little time in the early game to like kind of recoup and set up. But I was at this point where I was very crunched on... I had a lot of cards in my hand and not a lot of land in play because I had mulled the four. So I had five land in play, two cards in my graveyard. One was Master the Way. No, I had six lands in play, two cards in my graveyard. One was Master the Way, and then I had the guy that gets you back a spell or enchantment in your hand, in my hand.
Warden of the Eye.
Warden of the Eye.
Yummy.
And I had Treasure Cruise. Now, I had four power in the air. He had just villainous well with me. He had he had four power on the ground. And I think he had four power on the ground. He had my two Hordling chiefs and like the 1/1, the Kintree Warren or something like that. Do I play the treasure cruise? You know, take a turn off, play the treasure cruise, go for value, go for three cards, take some damage, play a little bit of a longer game, but know that I'm going to get longer value out of kind of unmulliging myself from the treasure cruise. Or do I play the Warren of the Eye, get the Master of Way, and just try and burn him out? For less cards and just go for the throat. I ended up opting... Now, this was slightly because I could get a 3/3 on the battlefield. He had, I think, that he did deploy a 3-power creature. I knew I was going to take a bunch of damage on the next hit, even if I had a 3/3 or not. I was going to hold back like my two Horde Chiefs or whatever, or one. But, you know, I ended up going for just the Master of the Way plan, mostly because it did put another threat on the board and went for the throat faster than kind of unmulling myself for the plan B. And I think that that was the right move to do. And it's sometimes hard to know when to take that risk, I guess. Because if he, you know, kills one of my flyers or plays his own flyer, like I know he had Abomination of Gudul floating around in there. I had faced it in game one. If he plays another flyer and like then I can't race him, I immediately like go down, and then I've lost both these, like, you know, then it's too late to treasure cruise to get yourself out of it.
It's never too late to treasure cruise.
I don't know, man. I mean,
were you at a really,
I had only two life? Cards in my, I was like at 15, or I think I was at 17, but I was going to probably take a hit for like 5 next turn. And he was at like 12, and I was doing, I was putting him on like a 3 or 4 turn clock. But with a Master of Way for 5, I also miscounted my math and was able to Master Away him for 7 instead of 6. Because I forgot I would draw a card for the turn because I was an idiot.
Yeah.
That was the other thing, is like, oh, crap. Do I play Treasure Cruise, get the 3 cards, then play the Warren of the Eye and get back the Master, and then like go for this really long over the top?
Yes. Max value.
But that, you know, or just put him to the gun, try and swing in for 7 next turn.
Decisions are hard.
Decisions are hard.
Or 8. Math is hard.
Math is hard, too. Especially because of me, because I'm a theater major. but speaking of Master of the Way, I think we should get to our Crack Sack of Barry.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do this week's Crack Sack or Barry. The segment, which we choose 3 cards on a theme. We choose one we want to crack. We're going to open
it's
it.
Radio voice.
We're going to put it. Okay, you
I'm sorry.
You ruined it. We're going to put it in our deck. We're going to be psyched.
I'm so psyched.
Then one we're going to sack. We'll sacrifice it if we have to.
Okay.
Then one we're going to bury.
No.
We're going to take it out to a field. We're going to dig a hole and we're going to put it in there. All right, great.
Like
sweet.
My dog Buster.
We could have had a nice intro, Cole.
This is why we
you had
have,
to ruin it.
This is why we can't have nice things.
I know. But I think this week we're doing 5 mana...
Sorceries. Uncommon.
Are they all sorceries? Oh, yeah, they are sorceries. Uncommon sorceries. And there's only 3 of them. So we're going to do incremental growth, or cone of counters, as we've been
bloop,
calling
bloop,
it.
Bloop, bloop. You get a mushroom, you get a mushroom.
It's 3 green,
look under your seat, you get a counter.
Put counter on one thing, 2 on another, and 3 on another. Oh, things get big. Got him burping up a storm. Then we're going to do Master of the Way, or Master of the Way. I always want to say Master of the Way.
I've given up on, there's too many masters in this set.
That would be a person.
Yeah, I know, because I feel like there's a Master of something.
There is Master of the Way, it's the 2-drop. It's the 2/2.
That's Seeker of the Way.
Oh, that's Seeker of the Way.
God. There's Master of Waves.
It's Master of Waves.
Which we've all been talking about a lot.
There's Mystic of the Hidden Way.
There's a lot of those. Anyways, Master of the Way. 3 blue red. Draw card.
Yep.
Deal damage to target creature or player equal to the number of cards in your hand. And then finally, Death Frenzy, which is 3 black green. All creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. You gain 1 life for each creature that dies
this way.
died this turn.
I think it's died this turn.
Yeah, it's died this turn. So you could like have a creature die in combat and then get extra triggers, I think. I think.
Indeed.
I may be dumb. Who wants to go first?
Well, I just talked about Master of the Way, so I guess I'll take this off. Oh man. Master of the Way surprised me a lot. I drafted two in that deck, the Jeskai deck, so I saw a lot of it. It's gone up in my... I think the format has slowed down a little bit in cons, where Master of the Way has gotten really good now, where you are primarily concerned with ways of two-for-one-ing your opponent.
I feel like it's sped up.
I mean, I guess it's sped up. I don't know.
I feel like it's evened out.
I think it's probably even... I don't know. There are two-color aggressive decks that can run around from time to time, but I think you see those fewer than...
Way not to take a side, Evan.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I feel like it's sped up, and I feel like it's slowed down.
I mean, I've played.
Look, I feel like
primarily
the
aggressive
higher.
Decks in the format, but I think that's because the aggressive decks can take quite a lot of advantage now of these slower later game decks that are, you know, trying to secret plans you forever.
Thought the format slowed down, Cole.
Well, that's what these decks are doing. They're all playing secret plans now. All
right, okay.
And
you
villainous
do the thing you're going to do, and then I'll tell you why you're wrong later.
All right. I don't think I'm going to make Master the Way. Do I want to crack it? I want to crack it because it's blue-red. What am I? Who am I kidding? Blue-red's amazing. It's no Prophetic Bolt, but I love this thing. And it did pretty well for me. I mean, it's a two-for-one. It's not a great two-for-one. Sometimes you have to save up for it. But if you want nice things, you have to wait and save.
Can I interrupt here? So why is it that we've been so good at having the clans be named, and yet we still say blue-red instead of is it?
Well, I mean, I say is it from time to time, too.
It's not just you. I mean, it's even like if you look at, like, you watch, like, the Star City games.
Yeah, it's blue-red Delver, right? It's not is it
blue-red Delver, right? You know, and
probably because they get sued if they use is it because they're not. You
no,
know.
No, they want them to use this, right? They say Salt High Reanimator, right?
Yeah, you're right.
You know, so, it's interesting. I think it's like it's easy for people to think of two colors and then say both those colors, and it's hard for people to think of three colors and say those three colors.
I think you're right. I think that's actually it.
Like people have been, you know, like Bant and everything caught on.
That's totally great.
So only when it was Rug and Bug was it okay?
Yeah, and that's the only, that's why
like,
those people
are confusing.
Only played those decks.
Like when someone said like Rug or Bug, it'd have to be like Bill. We're that's okay. No, R is red.
Like, well, there you go. There's your answer. Well, I am taking the Is It spell. I am an Is It Guildmage. I love that stuff. Yorick's deck was a thing of beauty that he drafted in the cube.
It's pretty good.
I dream of decks like that, drafting that. Master of the Way is the closest thing to Prophetic Bolt. It's come along in a while, and it's pretty good. I mean, I don't know. It's fine. It's a good man.
And it's still a long ways away.
Still a long ways away. I'm going to go with Incremental Growth as my sack. Did I ever tell you guys a story where I cast this with a High Sentinels of Ashiran in play?
Did I ever tell you the story where someone cast that with, like, three of the 1-1 counter lords in play on me?
I played against a guy who had... There was two Harn Scales in our pool, and I played against a guy that had the double Harn Scales. And in game two, like, I bricked a few on land. He played Harn Scales. He plays Harn Scales. He plays Anok Bodkind. And then he's like... I'm like, don't draw a land. Go. He's like... Tap two, put 4/1 counters on it or something, 3/1 counters on it, and then drop a Murric Nightblade. Go.
Jeez.
That's just gross when you get that guy and the Bondkin together. You get the
Awesome. It's like, death touch. God. So they had First Strike before, which made them difficult, but now they have Death Touch.
You don't even get to respond.
No. Incremental counters... It doesn't do anything when you're behind, and that's what definitely hurts that card, in my opinion.
Don't get behind.
Yeah, don't get behind with it. Have things out when you play it. If you are at parity or ahead,
being behind.
It does really well.
Sometimes you just gotta take your opponent from behind.
Incremental growth them.
Grab them by the deck.
And then get a 46 month.
And then you just go off.
Yeah, well, that's what it felt like. That was, I think, the best deck I had ever drafted in this format was this crazy Obzon deck that had, like, high sentinels, incremental growth, two armament core, and, like, just was, like, just counters everywhere spewing.
Thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty.
I'm going to put Death Frenzy in my Barry. Although it is the closest thing to kind of a Wrath outside of the five mana Faded Intervention or whatever. Not Faded Intervention. That's the last set. What is it?
Faded Intervention?
That's something?
What? That
Faded, wasn't the seven mana from Theros, was that what it was called? I don't know. They had the Faded whole thing.
You mean the white one that killed everything?
Yeah, the white one that killed everything.
I don't think that was Faded something. It was like...
They were all Faded something.
Retribution.
Maybe it was Retribution. I thought they were all...
Faded Intervention.
I guess they were all sounds different like a, mana costs,
it's like
they?
Magic Clinic where they take you when you're addicted to the game. Faded Intervention.
You were fated to come here.
No, Mom! How could you do this to me as they drag you up?
Yeah, it's Faded Retribution.
Okay. Totally, again, speaking out of my ass.
Faded Intervention. When you show up and all your friends are gathered at your house and you stop and you look at them and you go... I always knew this would happen.
What's the problem? There's no problem. It's just that you don't have furniture. You have stacks of magic cards. Look at me, Harry. I'm sitting on boxes. Anyway. Death Frenzy is Wrath-like, and I thought it was going to be a lot better in the cube. I mean, sorry, not in the cube. In the format. I almost thought about playing in cube. Five mana is a lot. By that time, they've flipped up their morphs. I mean, I haven't played it or resolved it. And I haven't seen anybody do it against me. I think the only time I saw somebody play it was Marshall Sutcliffe on a draft video with Secret Plans. And that seemed pretty cool. Because your morphs stay alive and their morphs die. But that's a little pie in the sky. I just think it's too slow.
No.
It's five mana.
It's really good when you like kill three morphs with it, though.
That's awesome. I mean, that's serious card advantage. Oh, yeah. I haven't done that or seen that happen.
That's what the best thing you could hope to do is that you kill a bunch of morphs with it, right?
Oh, completely.
Oh, baby, and I have done it.
Yeah?
Which brings me
okay,
to my
so,
crack Sackerberry.
Yeah.
I am actually going to... Now, really quickly, as per our previous discussion, what I mean by sped up and slowed down... the floor on the speed of the format has come up slightly and the ceiling has come down slightly. Like, I'm not drawing matches anymore.
Yes.
And I'm also not getting like tokened out by like two ponyback brigades and the fucking, because you know people are like picking the cards higher and people don't have, you don't get the crazy ridiculous synergistic deck that you used to because other people are
not aware of it.
Or they're realizing, or like, instead of nobody at the table except for you realizing that it's open, someone on the other side of the table is realizing that it's open there a little bit.
Yeah.
And so you're not just getting nut hooked up. Usually.
Yeah.
But I think I'm also going to crack... Master the Way.
Master the Way.
Yeah, it says draw card. That's pretty good. And it does
my
damage.
My three favorite words in Magic.
It's never let me down. It always at least replaces itself, usually kills a thing, sometimes kills your opponent. What else do you want? I'm totally fine with first picking one of the dual enemy colored cards. Like if there is a single colored card on a similar power level, I'd prefer to take that, but the uncommons in the set are really good, and
especially the dual color ones.
Yeah.
Like, all those creatures and a lot of those spells are pretty freaking amazing.
Oh, yeah. And I kind of like the blue. I kind of like the red-based decks. It's a color that seems generally underpowered, but if you build it properly, you can really, like, take advantage of
it. I think it's evened out where it's underdrafted because it's underpowered.
Yeah.
But now that has resulted in you being able to get multiples of the few powerful cards in red.
Well, it's... Power doesn't come from the cool splashiness of its creatures. The power comes from, you know, just the pressure you can put on early. Mm-hmm. I think since everyone's playing like morphs on turn 3 and then turn 4 and then even turn 5 or flipping them up on turn 5, people just forget how powerful it is to, you know, maybe play a 2-drop on turn 2, then a morph on turn 3, and then 2 2-drops on turn 4. And, like, playing that second 2-drop or, like, you know, generally just doing that, it's just, people forget
curving how... Curving out is actually really... It's harder to do, I feel like, because your 2-drops aren't as accessible as they...
Well, I think it's just as easy to do, but people just don't build their decks to do that as much.
No.
Because you end up not playing as many morphs or not as many... Or your morphs just aren't as good, or, you know, people want to do the fun thing that the format does, but if you kind of just ignore it a little bit and, you know, go for this other strategy, you can really get paid off for it. I'm going to sack the Death Frenzy. I might be sort of best case scenarioing this one a little bit, but I've played with it a couple times, and when you get someone, it's insane. And I've found, when I think of what the floor of this card is literally, it does nothing. But I've found more often than not, the floor is I can at least get a morph that they've played at some point in the game.
At least get a 1-for-1.
Yeah, and countless times I've had Death Frenzy in my deck and been in a position where, like, all I need is to draw Death Frenzy. And I will go from, like, 80% to lose this game to, like, 80% to win it. And, like, you know, of course I never draw it in those situations, but I know that, like, it's just an out
there
that can't be...
Those alligators are lurking.
Yeah, it's not Dead Drop.
No. That's another Death Frenzies. Have you seen the art for that? That's not just two alligators.
Apparently
that's like
not.
40 alligators. They're like ripping out a horse. It's disgusting.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
I love that they have those all. Like, there's another one too. There's another one where they have like alligators. Like
Dead
somewhere.
Drop. Dead Drop is the other alligator one. And then there's like that stupid 4/4 alligator.
Karu Dreadmaw.
Karu Dreadmaw. Yeah.
But, and I'm going to bury the incremental growth. It's probably better than Death Frenzy.
But I like Death Frenzy. I think you can also best case scenario incremental growth a lot.
Yeah, I feel like the floor is higher on incremental growth. And the ceiling is probably about the
Black
same
point.
Actually probably higher. The ceiling's probably higher,
maybe,
but I feel like the average
doesn't
case
give
scenario
you card, it doesn't give you raw card advantage in the way that the others do. Like,
yeah, no, that's the thing.
No, you're right, it just kills your opponent.
Yeah.
If it can do that, that's also really good.
Yeah, it's it's a really good card, but
you guys are crazy.
It's not a spicy.
Yeah, are you
you guys are fucking crazy.
He loves incremental growth.
You obviously have not played with this card.
I've played with it.
I've played with it once, but I played with it in like good decks that were winning anyway. And I don't know if it was just a win more, but
so in other words, every time you cast the incremental growth, you won.
Yeah, but I also had good creatures, so
that
I feel like every time I cast incremental growth, my opponent has like a throttle to respond with.
Okay, so then you only get a +2 and a +1.
Well. You know, the one goes on.
You know,
his
I didn't play any other creatures when I cast it.
Yeah, I don't know. I seriously, I think you guys are crazy.
Okay.
This card is literally like rare quality instead of being an uncommon.
Really? Okay.
I think the card is like, if you build like a good deck with like you guys were talking about with like a reasonable like curve where you go like, you know, turn two, you know, 2-drop into like a morph into maybe like a 4-drop, and then you play this on turn 5, you just fucking win.
It's true. I mean, if you have targets for it, yeah, you can be nuts.
I do think it is of the three cards, it is the one that's most likely to hit its ceiling.
Yes.
Of its like, you know, power potential.
So the ceiling being like the clouds, right?
Yeah. All right. Okay.
It just asks you to have three
the
legal
ceiling
targets.
Of a skyscraper.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's my crack for sure. That card is insane. Like, and I've watched like enough people like drafting, you know, people like Reed Duke and like Owen Turtenwall do it, and they're all like, you know, this card, if it was rare, I'd be happy to get this as my rare, let alone it just being an uncommon. And then I would sack I would probably sack the Master of the Way. I think, you know, removal is at a premium in this set. And drawing a card as well is just great. That's just gravy. And I just found, like, I actually do think that I'm actually, if I'm playing, like, you know, black and green and I have a Death Frenzy, I'm happy to have one in my pool. But I don't miss having one either. So I guess that's kind of how I feel about it. So that's what I would bury. But yeah, incremental growth is, it's a bomb.
It really is pretty sweet. I mean, if you can also then draft the Lords, you know, any of the Lord, like anything around it, it gets really insane. And
I do actually like what Larry's saying about the having an aggressive start and then curving out with that card.
Busted. The problem is, I think the reverse side of that card, though, is the deck that's all morphs. And when you want to be flipping up a morph on turn five, you know, or putting one, I mean, putting 1/1 counters, I guess, on your morphs are fine.
Yeah, because
I mean,
then when they flip up, they're even more insane.
It's true. I just think that.
So you turn one of your morphs into a 5/5, one of your morphs into a 4/4, and one into a 3/3. I'm probably okay with that, too.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. That, I mean, it is good. I think the people look at it. My only kind of counter argument is probably people don't see it as being amazingly well, or at least for me, I sometimes am not sure if I need another way of developing the board at 5 when I have so many morphs that can also flip up for 5. But this just takes whatever you have on the board, if you've got things on the board, from a C range to an A range, even if you're flipping up, like, you know, of 0/5 wall.
Yeah,
now you get a 1/6.
You got to think, too, like, if you have 3 morphs on the board, your opponent's already kind of like, all right, it could be one of these couple of things. Not really sure which one was which, but, you know, they're trying to suss it out. Then you put a bunch of counters on them. Just now attack. It throws that math out the window.
Yeah, and especially if you're clever about, like, where you put the counters, too. You know, you could totally throw them off with that, too.
That is true. It's pretty freaking sweet. Well, you've convinced me, but I'm still an Izzet mage at heart, so.
I do think I'm undervaluing the card a little bit. I played with it a little bit at the start. I think I've been a little worried about, like, casting it into a removal spell, but I think, and maybe, like, I haven't cast it when I should have just pulled the trigger on it in the past, because I was, like, maybe my opponent had some mana untapped, and I was like, I don't know, we could have some bound spell or whatever, but maybe I should just, you know, just be going for it. I mean, like, you know, removal is so expensive these days.
That's true. I mean, that's the thing I found with it, is that, like, you cast it, and even if your opponent does have a way with dealing your biggest threat, you still got two other that can, like, kind of help out and give you profitable attacks or profitable blocks. And if they don't have the removal spell, they lose. Like, that's it. You put them on the removal spell. It's like, either you've got an answer to this. I mean, if you have 3 legal targets for the card, it is very, very good.
It's bonkers.
But if you're behind, I mean, it doesn't do a whole lot. That's the only thing. But you're usually not behind when you resolve it.
Yeah.
Hopefully. I mean, you're not going to cast it if you're behind, so I guess.
I mean, I guess
you're always.
The thing is, you have to have 3 legal targets. I think it works just like Conan Flame, so.
Yeah.
You can't just put, like, 3 on your creature. Then you have to put 3 counters on their creatures.
So, I mean, I've actually had somebody, like, cast it before, and I've actually killed the guy. Like, they have 3 creatures, and they cast it, and you kill one of their guys, and then they have to target one of your guys.
Yes. Yeah. Or they could have 3 guys, and you could have no guys, and you could kill one of their guys, and then it would just fizzle because they don't have enough legal targets. Yes? Right? Would that work?
Could they readjust the target?
No, they can't.
Like, if there's only 3 guys on board, and you kill a dude in response.
No, it will still resolve. Right, because it's got multiple targets.
Okay. So
there's multiple targets, and you remove one of the targets, it's still a legal spell. But if they can't, say they have 3 creatures, and they cast it, and in response you kill one of their guys, when it resolves, they must choose one of yours. So they're going to have to put a counter on one of your cards.
Yeah.
But you
so
can't.
Like, say they're saying, when you choose the targets, are you also indicating which one's getting 1, which one's getting 2, and which one's getting 3?
Yes.
So, like, if they put, you know, they want to put, you know, 1, 2, and 3 on three of their creatures, you kill the one that was going to have three. Do they then have to put the three counters on one of your creatures?
You have to kill the creature before spell resolves.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But like, can they say like, okay, I'll put the one counter on your creature, and then the 2 and 3 on the other two, on my side?
They can't change the targets.
Yeah. So if you have to do it in response. If you don't do it in response, then that creature will simply go away, and there won't be any counters, and then you won't get the bonus.
Yeah, I get that, but I mean, like, what I'm asking is, when you respond to incremental growth, if you kill the creature that they're targeting with the three counter part of the 1, 2, and 3 counters, do they then have to put the three counters on your creature, or can they say,
"No,
I'll put three on mine, put three on the other one, then put the one on yours"?
So if you allow them to get to that point where they're targeting the three things, then that's where the counters go, regardless of whether you respond thereafter.
Oh, so you choose targets once the spell resolves, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So the spell goes on the stack.
I was unclear on that.
Yes.
Before they choose targets, you remove a target. Now they have to name a legal target on the battlefield in order for the spell to resolve.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if the targets, if you target when you cast the spell or when it resolves.
But, well, you do target it when you cast the spell.
But the counters don't go on.
But if you want to get them to choose one of yours, you simply have to do it in response to theirs. So their thing never goes off. So your thing will be on the stack, and then they will go through and do all their things, and they'll have to choose your creature.
Okay. The formatting on how this works is awkward.
Maybe that's why you haven't played with this super powerful card.
No, I haven't played it because I've played with it.
Just haven't played well with it.
Apparently.
Oh, man. Well, it is getting a little late here. But
we should say thanks to all of our viewers, or our listeners, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Thank our listeners every show. If you made it this far, buddy,
you must really like us.
You made it this far. Let's just leave it at that.
We definitely, especially like to extend a warm welcome to the new people who've come in and joined in from the MTG Cast website. We had a bit of a bump in listenership, which was nice. We started.
I think it helps when the show gets better.
Yeah. I know we usually. When we blast the new episode out on Facebook, that is our Buzzsprout sort of. It's like the direct link to our RSS feed that you can get, but it's a whole different process. We recently put our show up on MTGcast, and that's another place you can find us.
And as well as find other Magic the Gathering podcasts if you so need other things, but don't cheat on us. And
we'll,
tell us
still. We'll find out.
We'll find out. Anyways, happy holidays to you too. That's really what I wanted to wish the listeners. As we get closer and closer, happy Hanukkah.
Don't even.
Now I'm just pandering. Now we just started. We just pandered.
You're going to talk about Kwanzaa now? You're going to talk about the pan-African holiday that was made up by...
All right, it's time for the faded intervention.
I'm saying some real controversial things. I have some opinions on Mennonites I'd like to share.
And that's what we're going to cut. Any last thoughts? Larry, you doing the holidays up there?
I am.
It is awesome. Don't get eaten by a spore monster.
I will be alone at home with a Festivus pole.
I can't wait for vacation to draft a lot of cons.
I know.
I get a bunch in.
3 more days of work and then 2 weeks of vacation.
Get a lot of 4 o'clock drafts at Versus. If you are in the Bay Area and you want to play some Magic over the holiday weekend, I'm certainly will be frequenting the local game stores. You can always shout out at me on Twitter at @kcolef.
Yeah, definitely feel free to give us a tweet. We're always happy to say hello to anybody and everybody. You can get me at @nobodyrly on Twitter.
And if you're up in the Seattle area, Larry's available.
Well, I'm only here for a couple more days and then I'm going to San Diego.
Oh, you're fleeing the mold down for the sun and probably rain too.
So I'm going to have a green Christmas.
Nice.
But I'm at @chatfiend.
Sweet. Awesome. And if you want to send us an email, you can send it to wizardsofthecast@gmail.com. You know,
You didn't screw that one up.
Yeah, with Master the Way and of the and the
30 episodes in, we finally figured out.
Finally did it. And on that note, for Wizards of the Cast, my name's Effin Wardell.
I'm Cole Ferriolo.
And I'm Larry Chatfield.
And thank you for listening.